Welcome, Jubilee the Readers, to another episode of Let's Read Spider-Man, the best podcast to break down hard-hitting dialogue such as, electrons are always on the move, sort of like Pee-wee Herman after a Mexican dinner. Here to provide analysis for that line and so much more is my friend Eddie. How are you today, Eddie?
Oh, James B. I've had a fun day, kind of moving around, a little sore from all the activity. This line, electrons are always on the move, makes me think it's from a scientist, sort of like Pee-wee Herman after a Mexican dinner. I've watched Pee-wee Herman quite a bit when I was a kid. I'm not totally sure why he would be moving after a Mexican dinner because of the spicy food.
Just that Pee-wee Herman has a funny way of walking around.
Oh, I see.
I think. It's a topical reference.
Yes.
1988.
A dated one, for sure. Who does it come from?
It's Peter when he's like an impromptu guest lecturer.
Oh, yeah.
When he's visiting ESU.
Yes. Thank you, James B.
Yeah. You have one sentence that says, like, Peter teaches a class on this or something. And then while he's teaching it, he's making a joke, like, to, like, warm up the audience.
Right. Well, the professor says that he explains things much better than him. That's why he's, like, impromptu invited him to teach the lecture, right? So it's these kind of things that appeal to the students at ESU.
Right. Just like you're better at writing the summaries than I am, so I will have you do our first summary today.
Yeah, big book, big book.
And that's from May of 1988, Stanley presents The Amazing Spider-Man 300, Venom, written by David Michelinie and art by Todd McFarlane.
Peter Parker finds MJ huddled in a corner when he arrives home. From MJ's description, Peter realizes the symbiote from the Beyonders world that once tried to bond with him has acquired a new host.
Terrified of her surroundings, MJ arranges to expedite their move from their Chelsea apartment to a large upscale place located at Bedford Towers. It appears to have an easily accessible balcony, which looks like it will come in handy.
Peter moves around the city, first acquiring the sonic gun Reed Richards used to remove the symbiote from Peter, then going to his new apartment to photograph some before photos, and finally having a nice dinner at Aunt May's, where MJ reassures Aunt May that they will always need her in their lives.
This is the second podcast in a row where MJ has taken her clothes off outside the reader's panel, but we see her clothing floating loose in the panel. And we thought the door closed scenes were scandalous. Whew. Eddie, we won't be able to have young Ian Cooper back for at least 6 years at this rate.
As Peter moves about the city, he is stalked by Eddie Brock, a.k.a. Venom. When Brock loses him, he changes tactics and decides to lure Spidey to the church where Peter purged himself of the symbiote. There, Venom attacks. Peter quickly realizes his spider sense doesn't work against him, and that Venom is both stronger and faster than him. As Spider-Man lays injured, Brock tells the story of how his expose on the Sin Eater was derailed along with his journalistic credibility when Spider-Man caught the real Sin Eater. As Venom monologues, Spidey gives him a blast with the sonic gun. Brock is taken out immediately, and Spider-Man realizes that if he separates him from the symbiote, it will kill him. Spider-Man attempts to escape, but Venom webs him back and knocks him out.
Yeah, I've never read this book before, so I never knew anything about Eddie Brock except what I see in the Venom movie, and I was surprised that Eddie Brock's real issue is that he wrote a story that was wrong. And he,
yes, because originally the Sin Eater they thought was some guy next to the Sin Eater's apartment, and he had tried to frame him too. And
yeah,
Eddie Brock got fooled.
Yeah, just really taking that hard. Well, Peter in this book lets the reader know that Venom has all of Spider-Man's abilities, and he's stronger. He also lets us know that Venom lacks Peter's experience. And that there's like a different web material because Mr. Fantastic explained that it was organic and, you know, it's a different kind of web. So, like, he spells it all out to us in the middle of one of the fights. So we appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, Spider-Man wakes up webbed to the inside of a church bell, about to be squashed.
He's trying to squash me.
But when Brock leaves him to avoid the painful sounds of the bells, Spider-Man manages to rip his way out and run Venom out of webbing weakening him enough to defeat him. The Fantastic Four secure the symbiote and Brock in a chamber, and Peter returns home to MJ, presenting him with a stylish new red Spidey suit.
Actually, I double-checked this. That is the Die Spinner suit.
Darn it. Well, he's very close to getting a stylish new red Spidey suit.
Yeah, and in the next book, which we're going to talk about shortly, he's inside the book, and his suit fits like perfectly. And he's like, well, you know, good thing I'm wearing this, you know, particularly red costume. And I'm like, it's like a perfect fit. It's like, it's, you know, that's the costume he's wearing. Do you want to say anything about Venom here?
Wow, what a character. He's so terrifying for me. His teeth, you know, I'm sure everybody knows what Venom looks like. He's become so synonymous with Spider-Man and, you know, has his own things going on all the time. But he, for me, is scary. Like, very scary, too.
So I think it's a big deal that we have the artist, you know, Todd McFarlane drawing him, because he draws everybody differently than the artists of, you know, 5 books ago, 10 books ago, you know, 10 years ago. Yeah. And I think you need him with that level of detail to show like Eddie Brock's face and Venom's face. And more importantly than those, to see MJ looking like really traumatized. I think you needed that level. I don't think you could have gotten away with a Steve Ditko showing MJ, you know, terrified. So
that the splash page on this book of MJ huddled in the corner crying. I mean, I had to stop and be like, oh, this is really scary. Like, Venom's name is in red and dripping. Well, it's not blood, but it's scary. So, yeah, it's definitely a new era when we see Todd McFarlane start to depict these characters in this way.
I was doing some research on Captain America related to our last set of books. I was looking something up, and I saw that David Michelinie had been drawing Captain America in the early 80s, and he didn't like the way they were handling the character. They were making some decisions that they can do his personal life or just keep him in the government. And he like left the book, and he ended up coming over here, which I guess worked out for him, you know, since he whipped up this Venom character and stuff. Well, let's see if he still keeps writing him or this is a one shot for him. From June of 1988, Stanley presents The Amazing Spider-Man 301, The Sable Gauntlet, by David Michelinie and Todd McFarlane.
Once again, we got a great cover here, and it's great because it's no different from Spider-Man 300, other than Spider-Man now has his red suit on. It's a perfect way to show like a new beginning for Spider-Man. Well, we open with Silver Sable's bounty hunters, the Wild Pack, attempting to break into the Pruitt Building, a hyper-secure facility in New York City. When her men fail to break in, Sable is convinced for a price to test the security systems by Pruitt and his security man Cruz herself. At the new Parker residence, we see Mary Jane Parker and Peter Parker moving in. And now it's time for a new segment called Peter is a Mover. Peter Parker is easily lifting a couch and chair at the same time while saying, you know, Mary Jane, I've been wondering how I could make more money than by taking pictures for the Daily Bugle. How does Peter Parker, furniture mover of the stars, sound? Peter is a mover! Sometime before March of 2022, 179 episodes ago, when I first suggested this as a job, I knew the writers would side with me. There's only one problem with his new company. Mary Jane is not very supportive. Thank you for listening to our new segment called Peter is a Mover.
Well, first of all, I have to say, I did not know this was coming. And congratulations on suggesting him being a mover. You nailed it. You are the king of the podcast company by getting that right, you know.
It is one
that is excellent.
One of our oldest jokes that you just...
It's true.
Never let die.
Maybe I knew that he was going to be furniture mover of the stars as well. Yeah, I agree. It's one of our reoccurring jokes all the time, but I guess I can't use it anymore. I was going to complain about you making an entire segment, which literally is just you reading something that happens in the book, but I think it's well deserved. It's well deserved. Let me know when you start making the Peter Parker Furniture Mover of the Stars t-shirts.
Oh, man. Well, after moving, Peter goes to the Samarkarian embassy to ask Silver Sable why she sicked her wild pack on Spider-Man a few days earlier. She says it was just business, nothing personal. Peter heads over to ESU to check on an advanced photography course he wants to take, where he is warmly received by former professors, while MJ goes to pose for a magazine cover. On his way home, Spider-Man suspects nefarious intentions from Pruitt and Cruz and decides to snoop around Cruz's apartment.
I think it's interesting that he's looking into an advanced photography course when Joe Robbie keeps telling him, get out of the photography business. So, but anyway, he does snoop around Cruz's apartment, and he's sitting there kind of giving up on the fact that there's nothing here when he ends up finding a hidden wall panel. And Cruz has like a secret Nazi shrine with like posters. Yeah. They might as well just say like, I am a Nazi. Look at me, the Nazi. You found the secret Nazi shrine. It's like literally incriminating evidence. And even people just look at the panel like, okay, I got it. He's the son of a war criminal that was put away by the Silver Sable. And her test that she's taking likely contains deadly traps to end her life. Oh no, go save her.
Well, Spider-Man swings to the building as Sable breaches the last security measure and stops her from pushing a button that surely would have killed her. Sable mistakes fighting Spider-Man as a final test and attacks. Eventually, Sable figures out Spider-Man has saved her and thanks him. Peter returns home to find MJ entertaining Martin Jacoby, a headhunter for an online research company in Kansas. We end with Peter being offered a job in research from Jacoby. Every Amazing and almost all the other titles have at least one illustration where MJ is depicted as topless or totally nude with very little covering her. You were talking about this earlier, James B. I can't help but think this is a reflection of the pop culture going on and the many sleazy areas of New York City in the 1980s. It would be an interesting study to see how closely Spider-Man captures the atmosphere of the city through its long history.
You know, Peter was offered a job in our last podcast from the Puma.
Yes.
For a ton of money. And here comes yet another job that he could take. And I'm just going to go on a limb. I haven't read ahead. I feel like he's not going to end up with this job. Just a hunch.
Seems unlikely.
He doesn't get any money. Even Sable ended up with money in this book. And she even got a bonus for finding the Nazi. Spider-Man, you know, got no money, no reward for anything he did in this book at all.
You know, James B., on page 9 of The Amazing Spider-Man 301, Mary Jane Parker dishes out a zinger. That doesn't happen too often. Let's take a minute and read this one.
I didn't even have to look up where page 9 was, because when I saw this, I knew exactly what you're talking about. So, all right, I'll be not Mary Jane. The narrator says, but as Peter warms to his audience, remember Peter's making the Pee-wee Herman joke, an icy chill settles over a Midtown fashion studio where, Mary Jane, darling, I love what Sandy's doing to your hair. It was so stylish when I used it for a cover shot last year.
Really, Topaz? Guess I must have missed that issue of Kennel Quarterly. Great line from MJ. She's been listening to Peter too often when he gives his snappy spider remarks. You know, James B., I was really surprised that Venom was, you know, happened in The Amazing Spider-Man 300 and then was caught and captured, and that was it. He wasn't in the next book at all.
Yeah, well, that's it. That's all Venom's going to be. He's a one-shot.
I held him on such a high pedestal for, you know, the way he is currently in our world, in present day.
Do you remember when Peter meets Gwen Stacy back in The Amazing Spider-Man, you know, 31, 32, 33, 34, and she thinks he is super annoying and super into himself and super rude. He's always fleeing the area.
Right.
And she's like, I hate this guy. And she's purposely going out of her way to be mean to him. But yet there's this like, you know, she's intrigued at the same time. This Silver Sable character, you know, is this going to turn into a thing? Because she and Spider-Man have a really strange relationship.
Yeah, he seems to like pop over to the embassy to just like be like, hey, what's going on, you know? I would say yes. I think it'll be some sort of romance.
Because
I think she's more interested in him than he is in her, too. But
it's just so standoffish.
Yeah.
That makes me think maybe something's going to happen. If it was like very indifferent, I wouldn't think about it. But she's like, ugh. She's like, I guess thanks for saving my life. Ugh. You know what I mean? She's like really upset about it. So sometimes it's hard to get people to work together. And she's definitely someone's hard to work with. But you know who's not hard to work with?
Yeah.
And that would be Thor.
Oh.
And we see him in a book that's in his title that Spider-Man appears in. And it's from May of 1988. Stanley presents, I think it's called The Mighty Thor, 391. The Madness of Mongoose. Written by Tom DeFalco, penciled by Ron Frenz, and inked by Brett Breeding.
To start this book, we see Spider-Man out swinging about New York City, thinking of Mary Jane. Sigurd Jarlson, a.k.a. Thor, is also returning to the city and Earth. He finds an old construction foreman buddy who immediately puts him to work on a skyscraper construction site. But not for long, because Sigurd is abruptly attacked by the merciless Mongoose. I've been reading so much Spider-Man that I forgot people could be sneak attacked. So Mongoose lands a strong first blow on Thor. But James B., I had to stop here and wonder, how is the merciless Mongoose going to trouble Thor, the god of thunder, in any way? He's a mongoose.
Well, yeah, but he's been sent by somebody else.
Right.
So he's not just like a street level thug. He's something weird that's been sent by somebody. So there's got to be more behind this guy than just he's a mongoose.
Well, the mongoose knocks Siggy off the skyscraper, and Spider-Man has to save him. Mongoose then goes after Spider-Man with some gas, of course, debilitating him.
Mongoose claims he met Spider-Man before. It even says in the Marvel fandom, like, first appearance of Mongoose is like shadow only. I didn't see it at all, and I double-checked, and I just don't care enough to check again. But apparently, I just completely forgot he was in this Amazing Spider-Man 283. But whatever. Okay, back to our book. Oh, yeah. Anyway, Mongoose goes in for the killing bite.
When Siggy finally transforms into Thor and saves Spider-Man, Mongoose quickly finds himself in trouble and, to cover his escape, wrecks the supports of the skyscraper, forcing Thor to hold up the 52-story building. Thankfully, Spidey whips a web support combined with steel girders. The rest of the book is about Asgardians arguing over who will sacrifice themselves to save Asgard, and makes me very happy we are reading Spider-Man and not Thor.
Yeah. Issue 391 is also the first appearance of construction worker Eric Masterson. That is not the one in the beginning of the book. Eddie was talking about Jerry, but he just says a construction worker friend. This is a different construction worker. He gets injured in this book, and at the end, he's flown to the hospital quickly by Thor. He's going to be used as a hostage against Thor in the future, and he has a whole saga, Eddie, that's as convoluted as Harry Osborn. We're never going to cover it, but just a lot of things happen to Eric Masterson, I assure you.
Huh.
So, yeah. I'm not going to spoil it for anybody else, but
all right.
He's a real player in the Thor universe.
Interesting. So
I guess we'll do our sponsor here.
Yeah, let's do it, James B.
Eddie, is your home safe? If a home invasion happened tomorrow, could you stop it? If you said, I don't know, to either of these questions, then you need to hire the Wild Pack. The Wild Pack will kick in your doors and assault your home with 1,200 pounds of armored testosterone. And you best be prepared to stop them. Don't worry, though. It's a win-win situation. Either you stop the Wild Pack and you know your home is safe, or they decimate your home. And then, instead of a future burglar decimating you, you can change things right now. That's right. The Wild Pack. Find them on the dark web or on Angie's, formerly Angie's List.
That Wild Pack sounds a little too wild, we could say. As always, though, James B., thanks for reading the sponsor.
I don't read the sponsor. It's like the copy gets... Okay, sure. You read the sponsors on a couple of them. Did you enjoy reading the sponsors? My listener feedback says your sponsor reading is as lacking. It's lacking like Ian's Discord messages.
I will put my best foot forward next time for the listeners.
Okay. Listeners, if you think Eddie needs to step up his game in the sponsors, you can reach out to us. How can they find us, Eddie?
You can email us at letsreadspiderman@gmail.com or click on the link in this podcast description to join our Discord channel and connect with us through social media.
And now it's time for the close. I'm James B., joined by
Eddie.
And remember, listeners, if you're writing an expose about a serial killer and it turns out you've investigated the wrong guy...
Blame the hero who catches the real killer for losing your journalistic credibility. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Such a convoluted backstory. But Venom... Wow. What a great villain.
You know, we got the 300 and 301 with the same cover.
Yeah.
Red suit and the black suit. It's when the black suit came out, I was really into the black suit.
Really?
But having read so many of these books, I'm still into the black suit.
See, I like the red suit, but I think this has to do with my association with Venom and the black suit and just kind of being dark and evil and like driving Peter crazy when he had the symbiote on. So not my cup of tea.
You're going to go red suit?
I am going to go red suit.
Okay, that's fine. I mean, I'm not like, oh my God, you're a crazy person.